If President Donald Trump's meeting with North Korea's Kim Jong-un goes ahead, what kind of relationship might the two men have? And what effect would that have on the relations between their two nations? Well, there are examples in very recent history about how things can get personal, even ugly. Consider what happened to Michael McFaul, former U.S. ambassador to Russia. In 2012, as Vladimir Putin was running for election in Russia, McFaul found himself the victim of a viral video that accused him of being a pedophile. And to this day, searches for McFaul's name and the word pedophile turn up millions of hits on Russian search engines. That's just one of the stories McFaul tells in his new political memoir, From Cold War to Hot Peace, an American ambassador in Putin's Russia. I spoke with Michael McFaul recently, and I asked him if he believed that Vladimir Putin was behind the video.
Well, we have no way of knowing, and that's the way the Putin regime works. They always use cutouts. It's never directly from the Kremlin. Same way in 2016, by the way, the things that they've done. So I don't assume that it was him. But was there a broad campaign against me personally, against President Obama himself, where they described him as being a supporter of ISIS during the same time? That was crystal clear. And those television stations, primary television, because that's where Russians get their media from, they are all controlled by the Kremlin. And it was designed for a purpose. It wasn't just something personal about me. It was designed for a purpose because at that time, there were big demonstrations against Putin and his regime. And so they needed to mobilize their base against the West. They pulled out a kind of old Cold War narrative that the West was out to get them. And they blamed us, America, Obama, and me, for supporting, allegedly, we weren't, but for supporting the Democratic opposition rallying against Putin.
So this is 2012. Obviously, you know, 2016 and Russian meddling in the U.S. election is what immediately comes to mind.
It should.
But how did the Obama administration, how did you as ambassador respond in 2012? I mean, to this viral video.
Well, it's hard. And I'm glad we're talking about it because now we're talking about fake news and disinformation. And many Americans have just become aware of this phenomenon. But several years ago, of course, we were experiencing it directly. And it's difficult. What do? You get on Twitter and say, I'm not a pedophile? That doesn't work too well. Then some people start arguing with you. You know, my wife didn't even want me to put this story in the book. Just so you know, because she thinks once you say that, suddenly people are thinking in different ways about you. And that's how disinformation works. And remember, Putin's not trying to win the argument about anything. He's just trying to make a mess about the truth and falsehoods. And that's how disinformation works. And it worked, I think, tragically, successfully against our administration.
Well, so I'm curious what you think about this, because I imagine that critics of the Obama administration would say that, first of all, in 2016, the administration's response to what they knew at the time about Russian meddling wasn't robust enough.
Yes.
Sounds like, I mean, if you say it was hard and you didn't really know what to do in 2012, that it also wasn't robust enough. I mean, was this basically, were there multiple times, before 2016 where the United States failed to push back against Vladimir Putin on these things?
Yes, I think there was.
But why?
Well, a couple of reasons. And remember, I'd left the government in 2014, but all my friends are still at the White House through 2016. And I would say a couple of things. One, this was new in American electoral politics. These were instruments of power that we'd seen in Russia and in countries near Russia, but we'd never seen it inside our own country. Number two, as they would tell you if they were here with you, my White House friends, they didn't want to weigh in because they were afraid of being accused of helping Secretary Clinton. That was a hard call. I want to make sure everybody understands for me that was a hard call. But I write about it in my book. I think they should have done more, particularly on this day, October 7th, 2016. They put out their statement. And I was at the White House before I went to Moscow. I know how you roll out a statement if you want to get it attention. You have it come out of the White House. You have a press conference about it.
But you don't know that an Access Hollywood tape is going to break.
Well, we didn't know that. That was a problem for them. But they rolled it slow. They didn't do that kind of thing. I think that was a mistake. And then don't forget, there are other actors involved here, Facebook, Twitter. They are also seeing this stuff for the first time, not fully understanding it and not fully understanding how to deal with that. And I deal with those companies quite a bit right now. I think they now see that it's no longer sufficient to say that we don't have an editorial policy. Algorithms are editorial policy. But back then it was brand new and they were just trying to figure it out in real time. Mm. And so they were slow to react.
So let me just go back to the 2012 moment again. And in fact, what I want to do is actually go back even further, because it was just a couple of years before that, though, that, you know, there was the famous reset with U.S.-Russia relations. You're the architect of that reset. I mean, it was, what, 3 or 4 years in that time? How did things change so quickly?
Well, I am the architect of that, and that word is mine for better or for ill. And we had a fantastic run with the Russians. I'm glad you reminded your listeners. There was a period of cooperation with President Medvedev, not President Putin, and we got the START Treaty done, bringing down by 30% the number of nuclear weapons allowed in the world. Sanctions on Iran that led to the Iran deal, which I think is a great deal. New supply routes to Afghanistan, Russians, WTO. And back then, not just to ancient history, but 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the majority of Russians has a positive view of us and vice versa. It's a complicated story. That's why I wrote the book, to explain it. But the punchline is two things happened. One, Putin comes back into power, and he has a different view about us. He sees us more in zero-sum terms, whereas Medvedev thought about win-win outcomes in cooperating with us. But then, two, back to when I arrived, demonstrations were against Putin, and he needed a new argument to win re-election. And so he made us the enemy again. And as you said, poster child, I just happened to arrive right in that mess. And one of his advisors said to me, you know, remember, I've been living in and out of that country for 30 years. I got a lot of friends in the government. And one of them, a Kremlin person, said, you know, Mike, don't take anything personal. We're just going to use you for this election, and then we're going to get back to normal. And I was like, pedophile? I'm not going to take that personal. I'm sorry. But it turned out we didn't get back to normal because he needed to keep that mobilization against us.
Well, I want to play a piece of tape for you here because, of course, there's a considerable disagreement about whether or not the Obama reset was effective. This is Stephen Cohen, professor emeritus of Russian studies at NYU. And he says that during the reset, the U.S. was asking Russia for significant concessions, but really, the U.S. wasn't offering much in return. So let's listen.
This was called selective cooperation. And best I understand this expression, Professor McFaul has used it, so has Mrs. Clinton and others. Selective cooperation means we get, they give, and we pretend it's diplomatic cooperation.
What do you say?
Well, two things. Back then, it was not selective cooperation. That comes when Putin comes in. We were cooperating on everything. We were cooperating on airspace and civil society. We even had, we had 22 working groups with the Russians back at the height of the reset. But number two, with all this, my respect for Professor Cohen's academic work, diplomacy is not about concessions. Nobody ever does anybody any favors in international diplomacy, especially not with the Russians. And so the idea that we're going to give them concessions and they're going to give us, it doesn't work that way. It has to be where both sides think that they're better off to sign this deal. Medvedev didn't sign the START Treaty as a concession to America. He signed it because he thought it was in Russia's national interest. He didn't sign up for sanctions on Iran as a gift to his buddy Barak. He did it because he thought it was in Russia's national interest.
And Ambassador McFaul, the phrase in the title of your book, Cold War to Hot Peace, what specifically do you mean by that?
Yeah, I use that phrase on purpose to echo elements of the Cold War because there are things that are new. But it's not Cold War 2.0 because some things are different. Cyber is new. That's a totally new world that we did not encounter in the Cold War. Annexation. We thought annexation was done. In the Cold War, there was not annexation. Now we're back to that. And in particular, Putin is willing to use his power in a much more aggressive way than the last Cold War leaders. That makes it a very dangerous world.
Ambassador Michael McFaul is the former U.S. ambassador to Russia under President Obama. His new book is From Cold War to Hot Peace, An American Ambassador in Putin's Russia.